for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Don't take it personally if I step out.
I won't. And actually, I was going to say that we could get started now. I don't want to wait too long. If you do need to leave, if you're, for whatever reason, whether you're going to dance or just need to get out, I won't be offended. I won't, you know, cry myself to sleep tonight or anything like that. So please feel free to move as you need to. I'm Corrine Dennis, in case you don't know that. And I'm here because of Renee Splickle-Larson. I think many of you met her. Some of you may know her. She's a dear friend of mine. And she asked me to be here this week for the Haiti Focus Week. And as Louis said this morning, I couldn't say no to Renee either. If you were able to catch the board or the kiosk for the bios, I'll just kind of share what I wrote there. I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a friend, I'm a pastor. Mom to Eleonora, whom some of you saw just now. And my husband, Robbie, was carrying her around. And actually, our anniversary is on Friday. We'll be married for 5 years. Hard to believe. And I'm a pastor. It just started last August at a church in Burlington, Wisconsin, which is south of Milwaukee. Pretty small chocolate city, as people call it. So that's a good place to be. And I also said I'm a friend. And I was a friend of Ben Larson's, the reason I am here. Ben and I met at Luther College our first year, and we were really involved with college ministries there, especially the student-led worship called Focus. And sometimes he'd ask me what I thought of the music, because he was really involved with the music. And I remember telling him one time, well, I don't really like this song. And he just laughed at me. I don't know what that means, but. And each year, we kind of got closer until the third and fourth year, we hung out with the same group of people. And senior year, I think we were together every day, it seemed. In the prayer chapel there, and Ben would often play his music, and then he'd want to have theological debates at Marty's, which is kind of a cafe hangout area at Luther. But they weren't often debates with me, because Ben would say, this is what I'm thinking about, and he'd kind of get like really excited about it, like, what do you think of this, and try to shock me. And I'd say, oh, I never thought of that. I like that. And he'd be like, oh, come on, I want you to argue with me about it. I just always thought it was so neat. So we had another friend that was good at arguing with him. And then we ended up both choosing Wartburg, not together, but just happened to choose Wartburg Seminary together. And both met Renee right away, and Renee and I grew really close. And obviously, Ben and Renee really close in another way. And then one of the things I wanted to share about Ben is he had a love for life and a love for people, which included the world. And the world wasn't just this concept, but it was faces. And the world included Haiti. So the January that Ben and John and Renee went to Haiti, that's just what he did. And I was home with our daughter, who was born about a month and a half before that. And I was taking a J term or January term course in seminary that I created about writing poems on motherhood and God. And it was basically an excuse to be home with my daughter, not have to go to a class during that month after having a baby. And during that time, I learned of the earthquake and then of Ben's death. So my project that January changed, which I have here, and I won't read too much of it today, but there is a portion in this project that has a blank page because I just couldn't write at that time. I was so shocked and in despair that I couldn't really find the words. And that's what I want to speak about today, is this speaking from the silence or the void that kind of discovered this love. And I remember writing squiggly letters for like spooky parts of a story and thinking like, this is really creative and cool. And then my teacher wrote back, please don't do that anymore. It's hard to read. And I'm like, she doesn't understand creativity. What is this stifling? But ever since then, that joy and love of writing has been in me. And a couple years later, I wrote a story called The Girl Who Wore a Dog Collar to School, which ended up being this long story about a girl whose dog died, and she was so distraught she wore the collar to school, and everyone made fun of her, and oh, her life was so hard. And that was my story. I didn't ever wear a dog collar to school, but my dog did die at that time. It was a way for me to kind of release what I was feeling. I'm sure a lot of you have heard that in writing. Write what you know. Write what you experience. A really helpful book on writing for me is Stephen King's book called On Writing. And he says, write what you know and love, but what you know is also your imagination. So, you know, King says, I don't experience, and he's written some pretty freaky stuff. And hopefully he hasn't experienced all of that, a crazy guy in a hotel room or something. But he has a wild imagination that he loves, and so he writes of that. So we're encouraged to write what we know, and what we know is also our imagination, and write what we love. And in writing, to write not to impress or to be perfect, but for the joy of it. That's what I'm hoping we can do together this week, or at least today, if you're here for today, is to just write. Get something down on paper, even one word, to write for the joy of it. It may sound odd that I found this book so helpful as a pastor. And I don't read a lot of Stephen King books, but we were assigned half of this book in a preaching class in seminary, and I devoured the whole thing. I loved it because it's honest. And King says, he kind of expressed what writing has been for me in a way that I couldn't express. He said, there have been times when for me the act of writing has been a little act of faith, a spit in the eye of despair. Writing is not life, but I think that sometimes it can be a way back to life. Writing is not life, but I think that at times it can be a way back to life, out of the silence. And I think that is especially true in grief and tragedy. I also think that good writing or honest writing is about letting go of perfection and what King calls affectation, which is writing that is kind of just false or artificial, or writing that's done to impress someone or even yourself. You know, sometimes you write and you're like, yeah, I'm really good. Like trying to impress yourself even. But good writing, that is just thrown out the window, that need to impress and that need for perfection. I think that in grief and tragedy, that's kind of out the window because it's just such a raw time that you've got to be real. I mean, you have no choice but to be real and raw. And there's like this need to get something out on paper. I don't want to deny that there's fear at that time too, even in grief and tragedy. But when we can let go of that fear and let go of the need for perfection and affectation, something real, some new life can come out of that, and that's when we can get some good writing. If that makes sense. When we can get beyond that and speak from the silence, I think writing can be downright cathartic. Now I want to kind of go into some basic writing things, and we will get time to write if you're thinking, oh my gosh, is she going to talk the whole time? I thought this was a writing class. We will get to writing, but we need to start with some basics. And my number one basic for me is notice and name, which I learned the official language for that during my clinical pastoral education, or CPE, as pastors call it. And that was when I was a chaplain in a nursing home, and our supervisor said, you gotta notice and name. So when you're visiting with someone and you notice they look kind of sad when speaking about a family member, or you notice their eyes light up about something, you notice it first, right? And then you name it and you speak it, which can, in everyday conversation, I think we notice a lot of things, but we're not always brave enough to name it. In writing out of grief and tragedy, we are brave enough to name it and to just go there. So it starts with noticing. When you notice something, write it down, even if it feels ridiculous. I'll give you an example. After the earthquake and after I learned of Ben's death, I looked at the world very differently. And I think that I will always look at the world differently now. For a while, I could only see death and sadness. And so these trees were out our apartment window, and they were covered in ice and snow. And normally, I would find that beautiful, and I'd probably write a poem about like baptism and new life and these gorgeous trees. But in that month, all I could see was like this choking, brittle, about to break trees. And so I wrote about that. And then slowly I began to notice what, I began to see the world more out of relationships and strength in friendship. And so I was driving one day, and here's an example of a ridiculous noticing. I was driving and I saw this squirrel dead in the middle of the road. And then I saw another squirrel laying, kind of like looking at him, almost like he's looking at his friend and kind of saying goodbye, but like suffering with. Now, when I saw that, I thought, oh, that is so morbid and weird to like think of these squirrels in that way. But that was where I was coming from at that time. And so I noticed it, and then I wrote it down, and I named it. Why am I noticing this? Because of where I am right now in life. Another book that I found helpful is Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, and she explains this a lot. This just writing everything down that you notice. That as a writer, you begin to see the world differently. You begin to see everything almost as writing material. So you're like an observer all the time. So she writes, one of the things that happens when you give yourself permission to start writing is that you start thinking like a writer. You start seeing everything as material. Sometimes you'll sit down or go walking and your thoughts will be on one aspect of your work, or one idea you have for a small scene, or a general portrait of one of the characters you're working with. Or you'll just be completely blocked and hopeless and wondering why you shouldn't just go into the kitchen and have a nice glass of warm gin straight out of the cat dish. I love her. Watch. She's just like honest. Then she says, and then, unbidden, seemingly out of nowhere, a thought or image arrives. Some will float into your head like goldfish, lovely, bright orange, and weightless, and you follow them like a child looking at an aquarium that was thought to be without fish. And others will step out of the shadows like Boo Radley and make you catch your breath or take a step backward. They're often so rich, these unbidden thoughts, and so clear that they feel indelible. But I say, write them all down anyway. She goes on to speak about writing things on index cards, and she kind of laments that, like, oh, why isn't my memory what it was when I was younger? And why do I have to write everything down? And then she's like, well, maybe, you know, in your life you think that. Maybe you've had a kid, and she says something about when a baby comes out, like they pull 10% of your brain with you. Yes! That's why. My daughter. But whatever the reason is, don't be ashamed of that, because that happens, and like we notice something and then we think, oh, I'll always remember that. And then all of a sudden, like, shoot, what was that? Just write it down. If you don't have an index card or a journal, I always carry a journal with me. Grab a napkin or something and just write it down. Another piece of advice from Anne Lamott's book on writing is just to do it every day. She says, and don't feel bad if you don't, because I don't either. She says, so much of writing is about sitting down and doing it every day, and so much of it is about getting into the custom of taking in everything that comes along, seeing it as grist for the mill. This can be a very comforting habit, like biting your nails. Instead of being scared all the time, you detach, watch what's going on, and consider it creatively. Now, again, I said she's very honest, so she says, instead of feeling panicked by those lowlifes on the subway, you notice all the details of their clothes and bearing and speech. Maybe you never quite get to the point where you think, oh, so that's what the side of a gun looks like. But you take in all that you can, as a child would, without the atmospheric smog of most grown-up vision. Jesus is good. You see, I recommend this book. So these are the two books that I recommend on writing, and I know you shared one with me yesterday.
I don't know the precise book, but anything by William Stafford on writing, who's kind of a famous Harmonious Boy, has a lot of wisdom. Yeah. Yes. And it's very similar.
Okay. It's just as honest.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's what I think good writing is just honest. But you might think, okay, I've never written a word in my life, or I have and I'm stuck right now, or I don't know what to say out of some grief or tragedy, whether it's in your own life or in hearing about the earthquake in Haiti this week, you might be feeling overwhelmed and lost. But we take this word by word. And that is kind of the where this title, Bird by Bird, comes from. She says, about 30 years ago, my younger brother was sitting at the table the night before a huge project on birds was due. And I don't know if you've ever been here or if your kids have ever been here. You've known about the project for months, and you keep putting it off, and then it's the night before. And he's sitting at the table with like blank pieces of lined paper and sharpened pencils and stacks of books on birds, and like looking like he's gonna throw up. It's due tomorrow. And his dad comes over and he pats him on the back and he says, bird by bird, buddy. Just take it bird by bird. So that's what we're gonna do. And that's what I invite you to do in your own lives, is just take it bird by bird. Whether that's in writing or in life, in grief and tragedy, we take it bird by bird, one step at a time. Another quote that Lamott shares in her book about good advice on writing that she finds helpful for life is, writing a novel is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. I love that. You can only see this far, especially in grief and tragedy, but you can make the whole trip that way. You can take it word by word, bird by bird, mile by mile with these headlights. And I think, I'm just getting this thought, that those headlights are like the light of Christ. You know? And this is how much we can see. But we can make the whole trip that way. Just a few more basic things, and then we'll kind of get into some writing. In King's book, he kind of images a toolbox and thinking about writing. And so he's like, the first top drawer is gonna be your vocabulary. And some of you might think, ah, not my vocabulary. My vocabulary stinks. But he says, don't even apologize. Don't apologize for your vocabulary. You have what you need. It's not necessarily what you've got, but how you use what you've got. So if you think, oh, I always need a thesaurus with me. I don't know big words. I'm just a simple person. That's okay. I think the most beautiful things can be written out of simple words. So he says, put your vocabulary on your top shelf of your toolbox and don't make any conscious effort to improve it. And you think that's strange. He's like, you'll be doing that later as you read. And I think all writers are also readers. As we read more, we get to understand the flow and idea of writing, and we get our own kind of ideas. And this says, one of the really bad things you can do to your writing is to dress up the vocabulary. Looking for long words because you're maybe a little bit ashamed of your short ones. This is like dressing up a household pet in evening clothes. The pet is embarrassed, and the person who committed this act of premeditated cuteness should be even more embarrassed. It's like, make yourself a solemn promise right now that you'll never use emollient when you mean tit. I'm like, oh. Sorry. Oh, this is a little colorful. But he's talk plain and direct and get it out. And I like what he says is use your gut words. So I was talking, I think maybe with you, Steve. I was talking with some people this week and they thought, well, I don't know what to write. And just use your gut word, like the first word that comes to you. You can always find another word for that. But usually your gut word is the best word, especially in writing out of grief, because it's so raw. I've just been thinking, I don't know if any of you are Friends fans, the TV show Friends. When Chandler and Monica are putting out papers to adopt a baby, they ask Joey, their friend's like, I want to write a letter, like recommending them or saying like they have good character. And he writes this letter that it has every big word you can imagine. So much that you can't even understand what he's saying because he thought, I have to sound really smart to make them look good. So he writes his letter and then he grabs the thesaurus and replaces every word. And like the end, his name is Joey, so it's sincerely or most sincerely little kangaroo. And then he ends up rewriting his letter in just Joey talk, like just plain, simple words, and he even draws a picture. And then Chandler and Monica get a phone call, and they, wow, it was really great that you had a child write a letter for you. It was so sweet, and we really liked the drawing. And they're like, oh. But it actually was more effective than his baby kangaroo letter, where he had to write all these big, big words. And I think it's important to note, like, in school or in seminary, you're taught to write these really big word sentences. And I was always looking at the thesaurus in seminary. I'm like, well, how can I make this sound really good and really smart? And there's that writing to impress kind of thing. This is so much different. Creative writing is so much different than trying to write a thesis or a paper for school or research paper. So if you go back to school and say, well, I took a class at Holden and she said just use your gut word, probably won't work with the teacher. Just say no. But for here, for creative writing and writing out of grief and tragedy, you use your gut word and you just get it out. You can always dress it up later, but you just get it out. Then King says grammar should go on your next top shelf. Now again, this might make some people really nervous. Oh, grammar, I'm terrible at this. But perhaps you have the gift for creativity and for just seeing the world differently or imaging something, and you have a friend has a gift of grammar, we'll grab that friend and then, you know, have them be a reader for you. But today and this week, we just want to write. Don't worry about the grammar, just get it out on paper and just put it in the back of your mind, that grammar thing. King also advises avoiding the passive tense of verbs. I think in Greek, we also do that because it's raw, like I've been saying, and you just want to be, it's like, this is what I'm feeling, and I'm not going to apologize for it because this is where I am. He said that sometimes beginning writers find the passive form of verbs really comforting, and it might make them sound better. And he says, if you find instruction manuals and lawyers' torts majestic, I guess this does, the timid fellow writes, the meeting will be held at 7 o'clock. Because somehow that says to him, put it this way, and people will believe that you really know. He says, don't be a muggle, throw back your shoulders, stick out your chin, and put that meeting in charge. Right, the meeting's at 7. There, by God, don't you feel better? Yeah. Sometimes there's a place for a passive tense, but when you use it, ask yourself, why am I using this? Is it because I'm afraid to say what I really want to say? Or is there some other motive? He also said that the adverb is not your friend. And I smile because I had to learn this the hard way in college. In high school, I took a class called Yellow Brick Road. Now this is the like perfect senior slack off class, Yellow Brick Road. And even the title, you go, oh yeah, you didn't do the thing, right? So we watched movies and then we wrote reviews on them for like 2-page, 3-page reviews, simple stuff. And I was like, this movie was beautifully, absolutely, positively, blah, blah, blah-ly. And I kept going on with all these adverbs, and I was just like describing the heck out of the movies. And the teacher's like, A++, this is great. And I was like, yeah, I can write. And then I got to Luther College, and I wrote my first real college paper like that. And it hurt because I got it back, and it was like red, red, red. And the professor was like, quit using adverbs. You know, just like knock it off and get real. So again, I think there's a place for adverbs, but ask yourself why you're using it. An adverb is usually something that ends in ly and it describes a verb. Okay, here's a really funny sentence from Stephen King again. And he uses 3 adverbs in it, I want one. He says, adverbs are like dandelions. If you have one on your lawn, it looks pretty and unique, but if you fail to root it out, you'll find 5 the next day, 50 the day after that, and then, my brothers and sisters, your lawn is totally, completely, and utterly covered with dandelions. By then, you see them for the weeds that they really are, but then it's too late. He also said form and style should go in your toolbox, and I think of style, especially in poetry, which I really love, that's your own voice, and don't be afraid of it. Sometimes when we start out, we want to like copy someone else, just thinking, in our Bible, we have these letters from Paul, and some letters may have been written by people that were trying to sound like Paul, because they want to kind of honor him or sound like him or get credibility. Like, ooh, if I sound like Paul, people will really believe me and think this is good. Just forget about that in creative writing. Write your own voice and your own style. Just maybe the world hasn't seen that yet, and we need to. Finally, omit needless words. This is my other ouch in college. Was just trying to describe the heck out of something, but it didn't need to be that way. I needed to omit a lot of words. Just take out those needless words. For example, if you want to say, she slammed the door loudly with a thump that would have knocked over Moses or something like that. Maybe the context of your writing or your story already tells us that that door would have been slammed. And so the surrounding story tells us that she slammed that door and she slammed it good. Before we write, I just want to say again, just write for the joy of it. Don't try to be perfect. Anne Lamott has a good phrase for first drafts that I probably shouldn't repeat here. But if you want to know, read the book. She says we always have really bad first drafts. But just write. If you have this gift inside of you, if God gave you the gift, then use it. Write what you know, but also write what you love, and that includes our imaginations. Okay, I have a couple of prompts for us, which are kind of exercises to get us started on writing. I want to give us some time to write and also share writing if you're brave enough to do that. Before I give you the prompts, I just want to say, in our writing on grief and tragedy, we're not writing to erase grief or deny it or get around it, but really to enter into that journey and to engage it. And I think that's brave and strong. That's kind of a class I'm teaching on Wednesday is speaking about how we are actually strong when we're vulnerable, which is very countercultural. Ben actually used to tease me all the time that when I'd get weepy, and he did it out of love. He wasn't saying, oh, come on, grow up. But I think even when we're weepy or teary, that shows courage and strength. So we are not writing to deny our grief or the tragedy. If you're writing about the earthquake in Haiti, we're not writing to get around it, but to enter right into it. Here's your prompt. I'm going to give you some choices. So the first choice is, what season is this for you in your life? Or what season do you think this is for Haiti? Or what season is it for your experience right now? So explain a little. I see a spiritual director, and she asked me this question about my spiritual life. Spirituality. She said, what season is it for you spiritually right now? So I wrote, an image popped into the forefront of my mind, this tiny green shoot, bright, vibrant, new life kind of green. The shoot is standing bravely, maybe a bit surprised, and yet standing tall and proud out of frozen snow, taking in the sunshine, the promise of new life and spring. There is the smell of wet earth in the air, intoxicating spring mud. The shoot stands for new life, carrying water from the frozen snow for nourishment, for the snow makes the green shoot green. Yes, there is life, and this is a new day. It is not a forgetting of the past, but an opening up. And I go from there about kind of, for me, spiritually at that time, there this little green shoot, and the snow is still there. And yet the snow is giving new life for this shoot. So if that speaks to you, write about that. What season is this for you or for Haiti at this time? What I like about that question is that it doesn't say, what step are you in right now? As if there's a step or a level in grief, that it's more just like, there's no right or wrong, there is no beginning and end, it's just, what season is this? Does that make sense? Okay. And then I found a great writing prompt from a website called 1 Year of Writing and Healing. It says, write the word healing, or you could write grief. Look at the word, aloud. Then close your eyes and say the word again, healing or grief. And notice what comes to your mind. Say the word over slowly until something or a place or person or creature comes into your mind. What you're looking for here is a concrete something, a something or someone you can see in your own mind. Write down the first thing that comes to your mind, even if it seems silly or surprising or even irrelevant. Then write to describe that image in as much detail as possible. What colors do you see? What textures do you notice? What are its details? If you find it helpful, you can pause in your writing, close your eyes again, and try once more to see if this something or someone comes. No matter what you see when you conjure up the word, you simply cannot do it wrong. So this is like getting past the fear of writing and getting past the need for perfection or for that kind of fake writing to impress. Even if you see nothing at all, this can be a beginning. A nothing can be a something. A blank slate can be the beginning of something. A blank slate can be waiting for something to be written upon it. So those are our prompts. Writing the word healing and or grief and whatever comes to your mind, just writing about that. Or asking yourself, what season is this for me now? Let's write until 3:35, and then I know that doesn't give us a ton of time, but it's at least a start, and then we'll come back together and we'll share, if anyone wants to share, and then we'll close with a poem. So you can feel free to stay here or go out, and if you don't have paper or pens, I have that here. If you'd like to share something that you've written, feel free to do that now. You could say, please, what you would like to receive in your feedback. So if you would just like to read it, just to say it out loud and let it hang out there, that's fine. Or if you want to read a part of what you wrote or what you wrote and receive comments from people, name that too. So please share what you would like to receive from your feedback. Would anyone like to begin or to share something?
I'd just like to have an opportunity to say it aloud, if that's okay.
Yes, thank you.
I'm a hospital chaplain and taking a year here at Holden for a break. I'm trying to discern location and where I'm going. So, the tears of dying patients wash away the colors of my spirit. The screams of pain and anguish last away at the strength of my being. Without form or color, I am a ghost of my former self. I seek warmth, grace, and light to slowly infuse me with color. I yearn for hope, comfort, and support to help me to begin again. I am told they are offered by God, but sadly, I do not see, hear, or feel them.
Anyone else like to share something?
I'll try. And I don't necessarily need feedback. Basically, I'm working through the grief of a friend who died very recently. And I need to write about it. So, and I started writing about grief, but it wasn't quite gestalt. It was more stories. An email, priority urgent, subject Bill. Have you seen Bill? He hasn't responded to my phone calls for several days. The system goes live tomorrow. Response, priority low, context. I can't read my writing. subject, Bill. No, I haven't seen or heard from Bill. I'm in Germany on vacation. I know the system goes live, just flat, not my problem. Last year, my problem. The year before that, my problem. The year before that, my problem. This year, Bill's problem. Email, priority, ultra urgent, context, 1,000 apologies, subject, Bill. Really sorry, we need to talk. Bill is not responding. You're the only other person who understands the system. Please call the office. Reply, priority, piss off, subject, Bill, subject, piss off, message, piss off. Not responding. Email several days later, priority high, subject, Bill. Bill died on Friday.
Okay.
Wrote about the season. This is my season to gather past thoughts and images and that which may yet be uncovered. So much exists in experiences I have seen and in feelings and hopes that have been my companions so many years. Yes, to gather and reflect, to make use of this time past, not just for me, but for what may come of it, for those I love, for those I know and those I don't, and for whomever may come upon this gathered life.
Unless you really would like feedback, we could just read it out loud, like just name it, because it's so raw. I think that would be healthy for us. Unless you really want feedback.
I'd like feedback.
Okay.
Because I started out doing everything you said not to do. So I can. And the occasion is, my teenage daughter's recent birth, like a week ago. And so what I finally got to was with the season, which is I'm inside of Christmas celebrating Easter. And so Micah Stephen, it was a long process to accept, like the light shining in the darkness, that this is light from God, and life that comes with Easter and forgiveness and acceptance and that sort of thing. So having gone through all of that and finally getting one sentence, where do you go from there? I mean, what does that sound like to you? Where would you go from there?
You mean after the one sentence?
Mm-hmm. What I would want to just talk about is life in God and forgiveness.
What you just said could very easily be, I shouldn't say easily, but could be written and just be
so
that.
That's just it.
Just say
right.
That. I think sometimes we think of writing as different from like speaking aloud. My fifth grade teacher said if only there was a computer that I could speak to and it would just write everything for me because her thoughts were going so fast. And sometimes writing can feel like, well, this has to be the right word, or I have to, like you said, be careful not to do this or this or this. But if you just simply write down what you just said,
okay,
and let it be that. Because I think that's beautiful. That I'm in Christmas and Easter.
Mm-hmm.
That's profound, actually. Anyone else?
Sometimes can't you just sit with that too and like let it be for now,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the rest of it comes 6 months from now, or, you know what I mean? Like let it be, what is that beautiful?
not as honest, I guess. Kind of like having a child, you know, you can't force the baby out. The baby will come on his or her own time. And when we write, sometimes it's like birthing something, and it comes in its own time. Maybe you're in your contractions right now.
Thanks, Karina.
Looks like we're at time. If you want to share anymore, I encourage you to share with someone you trust or with someone here. And I want to close with a poem that someone wrote right after the earthquake in Haiti, and it's called Smashed Jars by Molly Gorezo. I think that's how you say her name. There they lie, shards of hope, which once contained water for life, indiscernible except for the faint patterns which once held them together. Women scream next to the pieces of their children. Men moan as they walk into the fragments of their hopelessness, calling, crying in desperate tones for loved ones in the rubble. Beneath extends the arm of death, outstretched, pleading. Then from the center of the ruins, a small figure emerges. Dust etched into the lines of her ancient face, tears forming trails of mud clinging to her cheeks. From the din, the noise of human suffering, she cries, gathering up the suffering of millions, calling to the one who can help. Her impossible prayer, arched toward the heavens, stills in its audacity. The time is now, not later, she screams. You cannot wait. From a distance, we watch her agony, longing for her redemption, but her shattered dreams mire us to faithfulness and cause us to look away. Again, she calls, but this time to us. Do what God needs. Do it now. We cannot wait. In this hour of horror, Mary speaks to Jesus, calling him through us to his time. And we respond, new wine amid shattered jars. Thank you for coming and for finding the courage to write. As you, in the meantime, if you come to another class or not, that's fine. In the meantime, a simple writing exercise is to, at the end of the day, before you go to bed, just to write on a piece of paper one word to describe the day. So if that's swimming, or crappy, or blessed, just one word. And that's a start to something. Thank you again for being here. I look forward to seeing you more.
Thank you.
Thank you.